Well, hello everybody and welcome to another episode of Going Downhill. I'm Wendy.
And I'm Shelley.
Hey Shelley, how are ya?
Oh, it's been a busy week, my friend. A very, very busy week. Not just in skiing, but in regular life as well. Getting everything ready for the season.
Why you're still wearing your pajamas?
Yeah, because I'm tired. And after this, I'm going immediately to bed.
And that's the beauty of being able to do a podcast from your home.
Exactly. Right? Absolutely. So, I mean, you look so fancy with your Napoleon Dynamite t-shirt. I mean, like,
thank you.
I love the fact that you just got back from soccer, but you have eye makeup on.
Okay, there's a reason for that.
Trying to, like, bat your eyelashes at the other team, get them to, you know, give up the ball.
And it worked.
Well, there it you worked. Go. Uh-huh. Did you win?
We did.
Aw, congratulations. Nice job.
Thank you very much. Thanks. I like winning.
Nice. Well, I got my new kit for the season, so Vocal was kind enough to donate some skis to my cause, as well as a helmet and some boots, so I'm really super stoked to try those out when I'm out in Tremblant for the World Cup.
Do you guys have any snow out there yet?
Oh, God, no.
Oh, we have, I think, 3 or 4 places open.
Yeah, it has snowed a few times, but most teams are starting to do their preseason travels soon. So as it is, I mean, Ontario is just a hotbed for spending a lot of money to go and train other places and support your Albertan economy. So don't knock
Thank it. Thank you. We fully appreciate it. Thank you for coming out. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good.
Yep. Let's just like kind of get in the nitty gritty a little bit here. So we were supposed to start off in Switzerland/Italy, correct?
Correct.
The men are having a bit of a rough start to the season, a little relaxed start, maybe. I mean, boring. It sucks when you're all ready to go and have your game face on and everything gets canceled.
Or they can sit back, relax, have some fondue, have a little Coupe Denmark for dessert.
Oh my God, the Coupe Denmark. I forgot about this. It's so good.
That's what I had in Zermatt like every day.
I haven't even thought of it. I remember one of our athletes was like, oh, can I get a Coupe Denmark? And he already had a crepe and all these things. I have no idea if you can handle that too. He's like, I will do it. And with the Coupe Denmark challenge, he polished it off. But wow.
Way to go.
It was good. But yeah, Coupe Denmark. Oh, but the fondue, delicious. Oh, schnitzel. Okay, so now that we're done talking about, we're not doing a podcast on food. There's lots of this out there.
So what happened with the men?
Okay, well, so the men were canceled again. A little twist of fate. I would like to say that Zermatt in particular, I mean, I've spent a lot of time there and a lot of time training on that glacier. And the winds were up to 130 kilometers per hour, and that's going to stop you from getting up the hill. There are multiple sets of trams.
Or quicker off the hill.
Yeah, right? But there are multiple trams that go up the hill, and it takes about like 40-ish minutes to get up there on a good day while you rush through and get crushed by a million athletes and elbow at everybody. One thing for Zermatt, when you keep in mind when you're training there, is that when you're planning your training schedule, you always have, especially as you would know, even in Ontario, anywhere you're training, you have to account for the fact that Mother Nature is not always on your side in this sport. And when you're training in Zermatt, you have to account for that. So you kind of have your training blocks, but you also have kind of the weather nature blocks as well. I have been there where the hill is shut down for 5 days in a row and there's nothing you can do. And there was this poor team actually from Norway that were, you know, like U14s, they had come down to train. And they'd only come down for, you know, 7 days or something. And 5 of those days were wind days and they could do nothing about it. So we actually had to catch the tram on the last day where it was closed because all of the Norwegian guys had their equipment stored up at the top there in the highest tunnel. And it's like 14,000 feet, I think, or 13 or so. It's pretty high. And so we went up there and they allowed the one tram with only staff and only permitted coaches to go up. And I just went for curiosity and they have this like kind of on the wind days anyway, when there's lots of athletes, they still have this kind of 1,000-kilogram thing of rocks that they put in the center of the tram because the more weight, the less it blows around. And going up there, absolutely terrifying that day. I'm glad that I did it. You're like looking thousands, like it feels like thousands. I have no idea what the actual thousands of feet below to this like glacier. maybe
it was probably horizontal at the time.
So sketchy. So very, very sketchy. And it's going as slow as it can go as you go up. It is not. Yeah. So anyway, so just saying that I understand. I was there another time and the whole top lift blew over. So we had to get transported via snowmobiles and snowcats to get off the glacier to catch the tram to go to download for the day. So that was always fun. Yeah. But anyway, I'm hoping that the next speed is December 1st to 3rd, and that's Beaver Creek. So let's hope it gets better. Because I'm curious to see how the men's field goes, especially in speed, because Bayat Foyts was a contender, but he retired last year.
That's right.
And then we have Kilday, who's obviously always, he seems to be on fire, but we don't know how he's going to be in speed this year. So I'm really curious to see also who's going to step up, like the young guns, especially into the top 30, because the first couple of races also like build and gain that confidence for those that were less experienced.
Right. Do you recall going up the gondola with Didier Defago?
Yes. But when you harassed him, and we told him not to come into that gondola.
We warned him. We said, do not come.
I didn't harass him. That was all you.
Was that me?
Yeah, you harass it. Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, he is the one who actually designed the course for Zermatt.
Really?
Yep. Oh. So 2010 Olympic champion. He designed it. So he's probably pretty disappointed that they weren't able to get that race.
Well, the women will be there next week. So that'll be the first like international, I guess, race, because it's half of it starts off in Switzerland and then it comes down into their Cervinia side in Italy. Yeah. So you can start off eating fondue at the top and then go have some like delicious like pasta at the bottom.
Sounds good to me.
I'm totally in.
Let's go. Anyway, but the men get a little bit of a rest, a little bit more training hopefully somewhere, and be all ready.
Next week, the tech guys will be in Gargle, and if I'm saying that right, maybe. And then we'll see how. All I got to say about that.
Okay. Goodbye, men.
Yeah.
So, have you ever been to Finland?
I worked close to Finland. I mean, closer. I mean, it's not that close, but I worked in Norway for a little while. But no, I've never been to Finland. But when I think of Finland, I think of it saunas, because Finland has 2 million of them. I think they're they're home to the sport of wife carrying. That's always good.
They invented carrying.
Yeah, wife carrying. It's carrying their wives. Mm-hmm.
What if you have a wife and a girlfriend?
Ooh, I don't know if that's part of the comp. Maybe that's like. I don't know if you can double up. They invented the Molotov cocktail. That's an interesting one.
Wow.
They have the most heavy metal bands of any country per capita. And they drink more coffee than any other person in 1 year. They drink, the average Finn drinks 12.2 kilograms or 26.8 pounds of coffee a year.
So I drink a lot of French vanillas. I have a French vanilla. I'm addicted every day. Mm-hmm. It's really bad. But they sound like they drink a lot more than me.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. Huh. And I don't want to see you on any more coffee than that.
So I used to be able to count to 10 in Finnish. At least I think it was Finnish. I can only count to 5 now. Or you tell me, you're the language expert. I know this shit. Okay. Unksi. Are you listening? Unksi, Guaksi, Galame, Nelia, Vici. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I can't remember 6 to 10. Does that sound Finnish to you?
That's totally fine. Sure.
Well, yeah. See, I rock.
All right. Nice.
Yeah. Thanks.
They'll be on timing in the next Finnish race.
But they can only go 5 seconds and then I'm done.
All right. Yeah. Well, let's talk about what happens in Finland this weekend. What happened?
There might have been some ladies racing.
Nice. Yes. We had the slalom there, right?
That's right. Yeah. World Cup slalom going. Weather looked great. Nice and sunny.
Cold. Absolutely cold. And do you know how you know it's cold?
How?
Thank you for asking, Wendy. So whenever you hear your boots crunch in the snow, you know that squeaking sound?
Oh, yes.
Do you know what that is?
Yes.
Do you know why your boots squeak in colder weather?
Yeah, because they shouldn't be outside walking. They should be inside in the lodge having a coffee.
Yeah, but do you know what the reason why it's louder in that snow? It's so like once you get, here's my nerd fact of this podcast. So once you get below -10, you have more friction.
Air or snow?
No, so when you, the pressure usually melts the snow, so it doesn't make as much sound for the crystals, but below minus 10, it doesn't melt the snow, it crushes the crystals, and that's actually the sound of the crystals being crushed. And the louder it is, the colder it is, because there's more friction. There you go. Rando.
I do not want to hear that noise at all this season myself, so yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well, let's get back to racing in the cold.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Minus 22.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
I had someone write me and tell me that they were very cold indeed.
I bet. Well, they have a lot of electric socks and electric gloves and electric vests nowadays.
I know. But as a coach, like, you just go through them because you just wear through them so fast. So anyway, let's talk. So this is an undulating course. It's a kind of starts off with flat, goes in. It has lots of nice little bumps and stuff. I actually like courses like this. There's a nice little pitch at the end and then it kind of flattens out. Yeah. The course name is Levy Black. Start altitude is 438 meters, so quite low, and it ends at 258 meters, giving it a vertical drop of 180 meters. We had our first run setter was Austria, and our second was the USA. So we are generally averaging around 66 to 67 gates.
That sounds like a lot.
It's a pretty intense one. And it's not, I wouldn't say that it's the steepest on the circuit. Definitely, I think there's other ones that are pretty steep, but it's pretty good. I do like undulating courses because terrain changes with timing changes,
I think
are really hard for any skier. Like, it's a very technical element. You have to decide when to gas it and when to go and where 100% is. And also, when you make a mistake, it's harder to recover in some areas. So it's a little bit more tactical.
Well, I really like the when we've got a pitch over top. Those athletes have to have that specific spot absolutely memorized so that they know when they're coming in and coming over the right direction blindly, right? Mm-hmm. It's all blind. So I really like the tactical side as well when it comes to that stuff, because they got to know where they're going.
Yeah, 100%. Like, their inspection skills and their mental skills are really going to be coming in handy. This is stuff that they've obviously trained for years and years and years. One of the things that I actually also enjoyed was on this race, they're starting to have the overhead footage of when you're coming over the pitch, and you can see some of the athletes setting up their line beforehand, because you always want to be taking more terrain and getting your hips over your feet before you encounter that terrain. If you're behind the ski and you're just kind of skiing it like it's flat, as you come over that knoll, you're just going to get behind and you're just going to be jamming on those skis, or you're going to be blowing out.
Ausgeschieden.
Das ist nicht sehr gut.
No, nicht gut. Look at us just busting out these languages tonight.
I know, right? Ooh, you're like fluent in all of them. Jeez.
Fluent. Yep. What I noticed is the second run was even had a lot more turns than compared to the first run. Although, yes, it is steep in some sections and it has those undulating parts of it. I feel that the line was a little bit straighter in the first course compared to the second. I thought there's a little more offset in that second course.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I usually find that I kind of expect that, because you have the top 30 at that point. You're usually going for something a little tougher. I mean, you know this, the point of setting a course as a coach is not to blow out the field. You want more people to finish, even if, you know, like, they don't qualify for the second run. The point is not to give them something that's going to kill the field. There's just that's a bad set. So if you're at a race, I'm like, okay, so I've had this discussion with a few coaches. I mean, what do you consider to be a blowout percentage where you would say that's a set fail?
30%
of the field?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd say in between 30, even as high as like 20 to 30%. Yeah. If you get more than that, like, you have to really look at what the set was. And sometimes there are trickier elements to it, and it's just a matter of, like, the athletes just kind of being young and inexperienced and not getting a course report or not understanding it. But most of the time, if that's the case, you're setting for your field. And if the coach that sits there and says, like, oh, they should have been able to ski it, is a coach that's not owning up to, like, oh, yeah, you set a crap course. Because we've all set a crap course at some points. We've all set the one where everybody's like, hey, Wendy, and you're like, and you're like, yeah, sorry, my bad.
Oh, then I go, Shelly set that one.
Yeah, thanks.
I got it covered.
And it does happen, and that's just part of ski racing. But but that wasn't the case in this one, and it is a large field. We're looking at a field of around 80 athletes to start with.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. So let's start with third place. So were you surprised by Lienzberger being in there?
She's no rookie. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm glad that Austria is like on the map, because Austria hasn't been, I think, performing as well as a nation than they have previously. And there's a lot of pressure on those athletes, right? So, sorry, Kreichmeier, right. I'm, of course, your boyfriend. but on the women's side, I'm really happy to see that. And popping ahead of Shiffrin on that run has got to be a huge confidence boost. And coming from 20, well, I mean, she's in the top 30 anyway. So it's not like I wasn't hugely surprised, but she skied extremely well. Like in the sense of you saw her being really aggressive in the first run and just making smart decisions coming over those knolls with a really nice line. And just, you know, and a few little bobbles here and there, but recovering nicely.
Yeah, exactly. And then what about Dewar? Like, she is skiing so well right now. She finished in second place.
Yeah, and Dewar is not someone I really followed last year. Was she for you?
Well, she was kind of on the fringe, you know? And I don't know, this maybe could be her season.
Maybe. I don't know. Like, she's skiing. If she keeps it up, I mean, yeah, for sure. If she stays healthy. And I mean, let's talk, like, Vlahova.
Okay, Vlahova. This was the largest margin of victory since 2019 in slalom.
Yeah, she is so skiing so well. Like, just from the perspective, also, if you look at her biomechanics, physically she's very different than someone like Shiffrin. So when you're looking at also like these women ski, you have to look at like someone who's 5'2 and Wendy sized is going to ski very differently from someone who's 5'9 and
like 5'2,
like Sarah Hector. Like, she's like a much, like, she's a really strong, not like, she's just a chick. Like, she can rock it. So I would say that you have to look at also like the physicality of it, because someone who is necessarily super small, like, won't be using the same biomechanics and physics, but they'll also be adjusting for their own personal style to be able to find the nicks and crannies of the course where they can excel where others might not. And it's and that's where I find is really interesting in this sport, because everybody's like, oh, small women, they won't be able to ski speed. But then you look at someone like Lara Goot. Like, she's great, and she's tiny.
Yeah.
A lot of people, I think that we have to take into account when we look at someone like Petra Vlahova. Like, Vlahova's, like, she's not a tiny girl. She's tall. Like, you look at her next to the gate, and she is not a short peanut. And, but technically, like, she is aggressive. She's on it. You can tell she's super fit, very strong. And I think this year she really wants to get that globe. I think, like, if her mentality in her skiing, like, obviously she wanted it, they want it every year. Like, no one wants to lose.
Of course.
But there's just, I don't know. I just sense a little bit of fire in those runs.
Well, she is on fire. 1.41 ahead.
Huge. Awesome.
Yeah. Like, holy smokes. Like, that's amazing. So, fantastic for her. And I think her season's looking really good. That was for the first slalom. And our Allie Neumar, great start to the season, sixth place.
Yep.
Fantastic. Yep. So that's good. Now, one more thing about Vlahova is she has now, with that victory on day one, she did equal Shiffrin with six slalom wins at that one location. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that was great. Shall we talk about day two?
No, because I have an attack from the back.
Oh, so, right. My bad. I'm sorry. Yes.
That's okay. This gal started 65th. Okay. Now, first of all, the top 30, the results, so the bib numbers 1 to 30, yeah. You expect them to be in the top 30. And they pretty much were. So,
or like, you know, like, or like, you expect them to be in the 30s or something. And like, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Close. But this girl starts 65th and finished 22nd. And did I read that right? Albania?
Yes. Yes, you did.
I'm like, is that a flag from Albania? Amazing.
You recognize the flag from Albania, or did you just look that up?
Well, it has ALB on it.
So yeah, okay. There's no way you know what the flag from Albania looks like.
It's not Albany, New York.
No,
so
or Alberta. And you're like, I didn't realize that our flag had changed.
So this Lara, like, holy smokes, that's amazing. So that's going to be a really good confidence builder for her.
Yeah, and you find that every once in a while from these smaller nations, someone's like popping in there, like Popovich and like a couple of other ones. There's definitely room for any of the smaller nations. I'm really curious, and we're going to have to do a little research on her history. Because also sometimes they were skiing for another nation and then they didn't make a team, so they switch, but then they get better coaching or better funding, or they just like something lights in their eyes. I don't know. So
there
I'm curious.
Something. There is an American girl. Did she move to Park City or grew up in the States? But she's racing for another country. I will figure out who that is. I think I saw that written somewhere, but
All right, well, we'll figure it out. Anyway, so yes, this does happen. And also sometimes, like, an athlete might get kicked off a team where it's really competitive, especially in Europe. I mean, as we all know, also, the Canadian athlete. Why am I gapping? Ronnie Remy's working for he's skiing for Germany now.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, and that's an interesting story too, right? She was doing quite well for Canada. We just don't have quite the same funding, perhaps, as them.
I think there's a whole whack load of reasons for that switch, and some of it's going to be political, personal, and like any of these decisions, you don't take it lightly when you just switch nations. but it does. It's not. Yes. It's not an unfamiliar story in ski racing, and sometimes it's controversial, and sometimes it's just preference, and sometimes it's just about the money.
Well, the American male tech. Oh God, I used to race with his dad, not Tiger Shaw. Who the heck is it? And his mom was from over there. Anyway, and they stayed there. So okay, forget it. When we get there, we'll figure it out.
You know what? Do your research on your own history and try to remember something. Your age is getting to you. That's fine. That's fine.
I know. It's
have another drink, Jesus. There you go.
I feel better now. Thank you.
No problem.
Okay. So let's talk about day two.
Yeah, day two. Whew, chilly, of course.
Yep.
We had first run set was straighter for sure. I don't know how much we can say. Like, out of all of the courses in slaloms, what are your favorite slaloms on the World Cup?
Well, my personal preference is I really like the tough, challenging one. I like this one actually because it's challenging, and I prefer the challenge than the basic set back forth down a pitch, blah blah. It's kind of not boring to watch because it's always exciting, but to me, you can get into the rhythm and then stick with it through to the bottom. So I like these courses that are challenging with the undulating parts, with pitches, with flats, with rolls. I enjoy that to watch better.
Yeah, I agree with you. I also find that it gives everybody a shot. Like, it's not just like the strongest or whatever. It really comes down to knowing, inspecting, and having all the skills all together. I think Courchevel is also a really nice course in France, but I this is actually one of my favorites, and not because it's the beginning, but it's, I would almost like to see how they ski this course almost later in the season.
I think you like it because you like the reindeer.
Yes. Yes, I do like reindeer.
They're very cute. Mm-hmm. So the winners here of the World Cup race win a reindeer.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So. And as we're totally getting away from the fact that the first course was a little straight.
Oh, yeah. You're right. Carry on.
And easier. Not easier, I wouldn't say. But definitely, if you ran it too straight, you're going to end up blowing out for sure. And that was, you know, the case for quite a few of the ladies. So, I mean, did not finish was 18 competitors out of the field. So that's quite high as a blowout rate for that. So
that is quite high.
Yeah, that would be in our 30% where you're like,
I was going to say, because there's at least, 70 gals? So. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, there's 84, I think, competitors. 84, okay. So, so we're getting close to that run. So I don't know if the athletes were too turned on, but definitely there was a high blowout rate. A couple of DNSs. So, you know, whether they were injured or tired from the day before, mm-hmm. or just, you know, whatever, it happens in every race. But and then we had mostly did not qualify. So I guess that was kind of one of those things where you have, you know, like in the later numbers, you're obviously going to have a higher blowout rate, but did happen. And then let's talk about, I didn't really find, like, I mean, Vlahova was just murdering the first run.
So did you see what she won the first run by? 0.78 though. Yeah, so she won the first run by 0.78. So she's slaying it this year.
Yeah, I really hope that she keeps on turning it up. I think the interesting thing about this season is not going to be, like, I think we're going to see the same five people vying for those top positions. I think the interesting ones is going to see the people battling for points from sixth position to, like, 15th. Like, those, that kind of 10 chunk, we're going to see. Yep. That one's going to be the one to battle it out for and to look for in the future, because those are going to be the new up and comers.
Yeah, and they're nipping at the heels, right? So, mm-hmm. yeah. So remember, I mentioned Dewar from yesterday's race, I don't even know what day it is right now. So she brought in a third place, so another podium finish.
Yep. And I'd like to point out second place, Croatia, Popovic.
Yeah.
Leona.
Yeah.
The second round race was a lot of fun to watch. And then, you know, Michaela Schifrin coming in first, but she didn't win it strictly just beating the field because, but Vlahova, like, she straddled Vlahova.
Yeah, like and halfway she, down.
Oh,
she was, and it, so she was leading and yep. building her lead.
Just
so there's that fine line of
super fine line.
Absolutely going the fastest you can. And then the tactic thing goes, okay, but just watch out for that flesh or yeah. that gate. Or
but
the...
if you're not pushing it to that level, you're never going to win either, right? So it's just, you know, like you'll just have your days where you do that. Like, I mean, Schifrin's blown out of races, seeing Vlahova blow it that way. I think, what did she say? I think she was just like shit on the side of the hill. Like you could hear it on the stream or something.
Yeah,
she was not happy about it, but it was pretty entertaining.
But it was fun to watch, right? Schifrin is at the bottom waiting for Vlahova to come down. And Schifrin had admittedly said, yeah, I was expecting to get second today.
And she was really complimentary as well. She's like, yeah, had she finished, it would have been like a second ahead of everybody else and always be a good winner.
That's right. That's right. But so she got another one, and now she set another record. So that's her seventh victory there in one location. So that has now set a record for the most wins at one location.
And she has 89 World Cup victories.
Amazing. So she had a bit of a sore knee the last 10 days from a crash in training. And she said that for the race today that she won, that she didn't really think about the knee. She just focused on the race and it actually felt fine. So that's good.
That's obviously what she did. Worked out.
Well, I'm pretty happy for the second place finisher because Popovich, did I say it right?
I'm guessing what I'm saying it really. So
okay, I will just as well guess as well. So that is her second career podium.
Mm-hmm.
So her first one was in March of this past season. So it looks like she's just carrying on from where she left off, which is fantastic. Good news for her.
Yeah, that is really nice. So, I mean, though I'm a little sad we're not seeing like Holdner, Wendy Holdner, like is always really strong vet. Yeah. We're going to see her, I think, pop in maybe later, but maybe it's just going to take her a while to warm up to the season again. Like this is the first race. Yeah. Let's see how we go. But I do think that those top five are going to be, I don't know, they're pretty in there.
Well, look at our Canadian girls. Allie Neumeier, sixth again.
Yep.
Right? Like, great start. Very solid for
Lolo our Canadian St. Germain, seventh.
Seventh. Her prior best in slalom was fifth.
Mm-hmm.
So she's in close there. And, you know, it doesn't take much, a couple tenths, to move up a couple spots.
Yeah. The women's tech team is like, you know, I think it's a little bit better. I don't even think we have a speed team anymore.
No, the last one was like... had to self-fund.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, your cue. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm going to bring up another attack from the back again.
Mm-hmm.
So we got a gal, Marie-Therese Sporer from Austria, started 51-13.
Yes.
So that's pretty good.
Well, I'm going to bring up Charlotte Ling from Liechtenstein.
Yeah.
64-29. So popping into that top 30. She's going to be ecstatic.
Okay, I got one that tops that.
Okay.
65-25.
Well, Kulturi, yeah, Lara, yeah.
So she did great. Now, I did notice something funny, though, or something different with the girls. Some of them are wearing chin guards and some of them not. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, so I, you know, as a coach, I've run into this debate before with some of my athletes. The parents don't usually disagree with me. Sometimes you have to sit down with the athletes because they're like 16, 17 for a second year fist. And... Yeah. They see, you know, like Hot Pants McGee coming down the hill in World Cup and he doesn't have a chin guard on, and, you know, or they see like douchebag McFast and he's coming down, you know, like, and they're all like, yeah, and they're all just like these Hot Pants, like World Cup skiers, and they're not wearing chin guards. And so I was talking to a TD friend today. And I was just saying, you know, like, I'm too lazy to look this up. Like, where are the rules exactly on this? Because I know that it's not a rule that you have to have a chin guard, but I just want to, like, look it up. And he's like, nah, it's in the equipment section, so on and so forth. I was talking to Brad Lashley. You know Brad.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
Hi, Brad.
Yeah, he's an excellent TD. Fun. Anyway, so he, in my view, and this is the thing that I've argued with my athletes, especially when they're younger, I'm like, it protects your face as well, right? Like, the chin guard is not just there to... it's there for a reason, because also yeah. with the nature of slalom, you're cross blocking, so on and so forth. Like you want to have a chin guard. And they'll be like, yeah, but like douchebag McGee was like super fast and he doesn't have it. And I'm like, well, that's great. Like, but he's a World Cup athlete and he's like 25 and he can make his own decisions. Whereas you're like 16 and your parents are going to pay for your dental work. So, and Lashley actually put it the best. He said, chin guard, $50. New mouth, $5,000. I was like, that's an excellent way to put it. Like,
done.
If you've ever yeah. seen someone take a gate to the face, even in a GS course, it is not pretty. And it's like just not good. And so we were talking about the chin guard itself. And the one thing that I never really thought of, but like I had always heard the rumor that like if someone falls on their chin guard, like face plants, and I've never really seen anyone hit their face like directly. Usually you're hitting it to the left or right. But if you just nail the thing right in the center, they're actually designed to give way or break. And the interesting thing is that I never really thought of that, because there's always this rumor that you'd like catch your chin guard. So people, sometimes people would be like, oh, I don't want yeah. our chin guard in case it catches. And like, you know, and it, but that's not really what they're designed to do. The thing that I think is interesting with that is that I know just a lot of athletes like to hang their helmets on their bags by their chin yeah. straps. And I'm definitely going to say I don't recommend this, because you don't know if you're compromising the ability for the equipment to work properly when you're constantly putting strain on the safety
bang,
device.
Bang, bang.
Yeah, yeah. For the same reason that I tell all of my athletes and all of everyone, including myself, replace your helmet every 2 years, because it's banging around in your knapsack. It's like dropping on the ground. It's dropping at lunch when someone knocks it off the table and then replaces it really quickly. Like it's just like you don't know. And no one, I have never seen a study on how the materials in a helmet actually decompose or how they're compromised. So I just recommend, I'm like, you know, like, and I tell this to parents all the time, I'm like, do you want to take care of your child when they're older, or do you want them to take care of you? So just spend the money. So anyway, so that's yeah. that's my view on the helmets, but that's also the chin guard thing. So thanks, Brad, for helping me be lazier and not having to do research on that.
He's enabling.
Yes, he is. He is totally enabling. Thanks, Brad. Thanks for making me lazier.
Yay.
But anyway, so that's my safety lesson of the, and rule lesson also, if you want to know the fist rules, because that is a thing.
So is that actually a rule then? You must wear a chin guard?
No, you don't. You don't have to wear a chin guard.
It's recommended.
It's just a recommended piece of safety equipment. Well, the helmets all have to be fist regulated, right? Because like the sticker on the back, they have to have a yeah. certain amount of standard. But for actual fists, for racing in fists or racing in general, the chin guard is not required. I personally always like my athletes to go with like a mouth guard and a chin guard, just because, again, gate to the face equals saving your face. Or also just mouth guards have been previous studies to reduce concussions. So just saying.
Yeah. Get a chin guard. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I think that about covers our race events from
I think you're right.
Finland. Yeah.
Do you have anything else to say about this?
Nope. I sure don't. But I hope that they're warmer at their next race.
Yeah. Oh, don't envy the -22. It's not fun.
No, not mm-hmm. doing it.
No.
So,
well, yeah. I'm going to be doing it probably at some point this season, but.
Well, Tremblant isn't usually known for its balmy summer temperatures.
No, right? Well, Tremblant's a little weird at this time of year, because you could be like that humid, like -2, foggy, cold with the snowmakers going, which is just unbearably humidly cold. Or you get like that -40 humid cold where it's just, the worst frostbite I have ever had in my life. Actually, both places, Mont-Saint-Anne, Quebec, uh-huh. and Mont-Tremblant, Quebec. Those are the two that I've had the worst frostbite I've ever had. So
yeah, maybe I won't come visit you in Tremblant then.
Well, I mean, luckily for me, I'm just there to witness and to report on the events. So if it really gets to the point where it's comes down to my fingers and toes, I am 100% out of there, and I'm gonna be like, hey Wendy, I'm just watching from the bedroom.
Well, we did TV that before feed. Didn't we, when we covered the World Cup at Lake Louise?
Yeah, but we weren't right. doing the podcast then, otherwise we'd be doing no. everything
oh,
else.
Oh, right, so. We were watching, but it was nice and cozy and warm, so
it was nice so yeah. Anyway, so that's so I'm hoping that it's gonna be a little cooler, but yeah, next week we're in Gurgel, I think, and then where else are we? Oh, we're in, yeah, and then we're doing speed races for the women.
Yeah.
Yeah, das ist gut.
Yeah.
Hopefully we'll get that race off in Zermatt.
Yeah, exactly.
I got nothing else.
Do you have me either. Nope.
Well, no, fine.
I think we're good.
All right. Well, you go back and make sure you take off your eye makeup.
I don't know how. I let it wear off.
Gross. Are you serious?
Yeah.
That is so bad for you.
It just wears away, I guess.
I'm going to come back next week with some facts on like why you should always take off your makeup.
I don't know how to take it off.
There's eye makeup remover, you dumbass.
Like for mascara.
For eye makeup. It's called eye makeup. It's eye makeup remover. It's a specific. Your daughter will know what it is.
Yeah, she would. I absolutely know that. Brown stuff people put on their faces. No, thank you.
Oh my God, no. It's just like a gentle cleanser that... Okay. All right. Well, we'll go into the makeup on the next podcast.
You know, I don't even own a purse, right? So I don't know.
If you owned a purse, I'd slap you with your own purse at this point.
I don't know what I'd put in it.
Anyway, alcohol. For this, I go for it.
Okay. I'm going to go buy a purse and learn how to carry it. I'll Google it first.
You put your eye makeup remover in it.
That's right. All right. Well, I guess this is it then.
Yeah, way to spin this one out.
All right. Okay, everyone. Well, thanks for listening. Until next time, this has been Wendy.
And this has been Shelley. Keep bye-bye, your tips everybody. Up, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Sorry. Someone's like knocking on my door. Probably me.
We're already falling apart and we haven't even begun. All right, ready?
Yeah, man.
Okay.